Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I am your host, Shane Bacon, and the season has officially begun. Yes, the wraparound season has started. The Safeway is underway, of course, missing a very important part of what this week was supposed to be. I was actually mid-flight to Oakland, California to drive up to Napa. I was excited, never spent any time in Napa. I was going up simply to report and watch the circus that is a big Tiger Woods return to golf into the tour. And mid-flight, news broke on Monday that Tiger was not going to play. Of course, committed on Friday. It was a very strange deal, especially considering all the hype that was surrounding this. Weeks and weeks of rumors. His website had had reports about him coming back. He talked about it at the Ryder Cup, but he didn't do it. He was not going to play. So I have Steve Flesch coming up on the podcast here in a little bit. 49-year-old, four-time PGA Tour winner. Played plenty of golf with Tiger Woods over the years, and got a lot of his thoughts on getting older on tour and the mentality that it takes, and what he thought about the news that was Tiger Woods pulling out just 3 days after committing to his first event of 2016. But we'll get to that. First things first, this week's Clubhouse podcast is brought to you by Swing Juice. And listen, we golfers tend to forget about the female golfers out there, so I'm going to take this week to remind the female listeners that Swing Juice does not forget about you. No, it doesn't. Some amazing styles out there for ladies. Swing Juice has sent my fiance some shirts. She absolutely loves them. She actually wore one to work the other day. They have tanks and tees for ladies. If you use the offer code BACON, you'll save 20%. It's a steal of a deal for sure. Make sure to check out swingjuice.com and step up that closet game. Swingjuice.com, offer code BACON will save you 20%. And the Tiger news is surprising. Another thing that was surprising was watching the long drive competition this week. Those men are just not worldly. I mean, they look like they should, and one of them owned a gym, but I mean, these are monsters. It's amazing. If you saw one of these guys on the driving range, I think you'd probably scoot two bays away because you wouldn't want to get any errant golf shot. I mean, the clubhead speed, the ability to pound the golf ball out there, Joe Miller won it, 439-yard drive, 439 yards. And honestly, I think he could hit it further. He was hitting a cut. These guys are hitting cuts with their driver and hitting it in their 400-yard grid. I do have a couple of suggestions. One is the fairway should be baked out. Bake this thing out. Move the grid back 40, 50, 60 yards. Move it to 500 yards. I was seeing so many golf shots land soft, and I know you can't deal with weather if they had some rain in Oklahoma, all that stuff, but I think it should be as dry as you can make it. This is all about distance. It's all about power. Dry it out. Let's let these things roll 40, 50, 60, 70 yards. I'm sure they would, especially if you get the right trajectory. Second thing is, and this is just a little tweak to the system, and it probably won't go over well with long drive people, but I do hate that of 8 balls or 10 balls or 15 balls, all you got to do is get one in the grid. I feel like in a home run derby, you have these outs. You know, you have outs. If you hit a foul ball or you don't get out of the park, it's an out. I almost feel like you should have a percentage of where you have to get the ball in play because, you know, at times you see one good drive and that's it. And maybe that's part of the competition. Maybe it's about, you know, finding that one swing that works. But I would like to see maybe if you had to get 25% of them in the grid. I mean, at least put some premium on accuracy because one of the guys in the finals got 7 of 8 in the grid. I mean, to me, that's as impressive as a guy hitting it 430. You're hitting the ball 360 to 380, 390, 400 yards, and you're getting it in play. You know, that accounts for something. I think that's impressive. But that's that. It is again the wraparound season. We are underway. Safeway is going. Phil Mickelson is there. Of course, Tiger Woods is not. Steve Flesch, Fox analyst, preparing for PGA Tour champions, joined us and listened to the whole interview. It was really interesting. We talked about Tiger to start, but I really liked at the end. We got into Steve Flesch as a player. We got into some quick questions. We talked about his temper, which is really surprising. He is such a mild mannered guy when you meet him and talk to him and be around him, but he admits it. I mean, he said he had a temper on tour. He talked about clubs he broke. He talked about his most impressive stat he's ever had. It was a great conversation, and it's great to hear insight from somebody that spent so many years around Tiger and who's also, you know, getting up in age. I had a conversation with Steve Flesch about what it's like to be late in your 40s and trying to grind it out still, and I mean, it's tough. So Steve Flesch next on the Clubhouse. If you don't follow us on Twitter, make sure you do, at Shane Bacon and at the Clubhouse Pod. Let's get to the interview. And now we welcome into the Clubhouse four-time PGA Tour winner, soon to be PGA Tour Champions member. I know he's excited about that. Steve Flesh, of course, also part of our Fox Golf coverage of the USGA events. And Shadows is one of the most opinionated political pundits out on Twitter, maybe a surprise political pundit out on Twitter. Steve, how you doing?
I am good, Shane. Thanks for having me on today.
Well, first things first, I ask all the golfers that join me on the podcast what you've had to eat today. So I wanted to ask, what have you had to eat today? It's about 12:45 your time. So what have you thrown down the chute?
Well, you may have seen a little tweet I threw out there a little while ago. I visited one of our old stomping grounds here in Cincinnati, Skyline Chili. I had a four-way with beans on it. I just do light cheese because I'm a little health conscious, but not really a health plate at all, but just a nice comfort food in this 60-degree dreary day in Cincinnati, Ohio.
When you know you're going to throw back something like that, do you just bypass breakfast altogether?
Yes, actually, I did bypass breakfast, but I was out practicing, and it started to spit rain, and it's kind of chilly. The leaves are turning a little bit, and I said, this is just a perfect skyline day. So I ran down to the corner. We have one not far from our house, and had a nice four-way. It only took a few minutes, and I'm back home here to talk to you. It's perfect football weather is really the time of year here in Northern Kentucky, Cincinnati area.
And when you live in Cincinnati, I mean, most professional golfers are spending time in Florida or Arizona. When the winter comes there, do you just hang the clubs up for a few months?
You know, Shane, I pretty much did, because it was such a long year. I needed that two, three-month break. I didn't really care for the time that I actually spent in Florida playing the mini tours and whatnot when I got out of college. It was, you know, actually kind of depressing down there. It was such a tough way to make money. So I just kind of stuck to my roots here in Northern Kentucky, and I would take that time off and then crank it up around the Bob Hope Classic, as it was called at the time, at the beginning of the year, and just play my way into form. That's maybe why I didn't have such great West Coast swings. I was, you know, knocking a lot of rust off those weeks, but I just kind of enjoyed being here. But after 49 years in these winters in Kentucky, I'm kind of ready to move on to a warmer climate.
It's about time to move on. Well, I wanted to get into, of course, the topic of the week is Tiger Woods. It's kind of weird to say that almost. I mean, I feel like with the golf season and where we're at, bringing up Tiger Woods' name still doesn't seem like it's almost appropriate, especially after the Ryder Cup. But of course, Tiger was supposed to play in the Safeway. I was mid-flight to Oakland, California to spend the week in Napa, and I was on my computer and got word that Tiger was not going to be playing. And I just wanted to get your thoughts, your initial thoughts, when you heard that Tiger had made that decision after committing to the golf tournament on Friday, he pulls out Monday morning.
Well, I'll back up just a little bit to Friday when he actually committed. When he said he was going to play the Safeway, you know, I have a little bit of a cynical personality, and I was like, you know what, I'll believe it when I see it. And then when he actually committed on Friday last week, I was like, wow, awesome, because I'm a big Tiger fan. I love watching him play golf. Nobody can hit shots that he has hit in the last 20 years plus. And I was excited to see him come back. But then when I saw that he withdrew, I was like, my gosh, what happened over the week? I mean, I truly was bummed, because I was looking forward to playing. I've said it to numerous people. He's the only guy I really set my DVR for to watch play golf, whether it's good or bad, because he's exciting, whether he's, you know, playing great or he's struggling. He makes TV interesting. So I was bummed. I really was bummed. But, you know, and then as we heard a little more of kind of why, and he used the word vulnerable, you know, you go back years, Tiger would never really give the media any indication of where he was mentally or physically. But to use that word vulnerable, to me, it's more of a mental term than it is like where he is physically with his rehabilitation. So I think he's a little fragile. I mean, granted, it's my opinion, but something happened over the weekend, or, you know, where he just said, man, I'm not ready, or I'm not in the right frame of mind mentally to go out there and compete. Because, you know, he committed on Friday, but a lot of people said, oh, we saw you know, how DJ and Phil and those guys were playing at the Ryder Cup, but you know, that was the week prior. And if he didn't think he was there, I don't think he would have committed, but he went ahead and committed. And, then something happened in his preparation out there in California where he just said, whoa, time out. I'm not there yet. But I have a feeling, you know, all indications are physically he's doing great, but you know, Tiger's always been the guy who said he was never going to enter an event unless he felt like he was going to win. And obviously he didn't feel like he could win, but I think there might be a little more fragility in his mind than that.
Well, and you think about, you know, his return in 2015, and just throw some numbers out. He shot an 82 in the second round at the Waste Management. I mean, TPC Scottsdale, you've played it before. Not the most demanding, difficult golf course on tour by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, it's a place that Phil Mickelson, you know, was a lip out away from shooting 59. He shoots 85 in the third round at the Memorial on a golf course that he's had plenty of success on in the past. I mean, this is a guy that threw up these big numbers in events where he, you know, he started those events. I mean, he went to that place thinking either he thought I still have game to play, or he went saying maybe I can string together something that appears to look like a guy that can play four rounds of golf. I mean, you'd have to think that something drastic and major happened in his golf game, as you mentioned, maybe mentally in his golf game, that he said on Friday I'm good to go, on Sunday I can't do this. And it's almost like a fear it comes off as, that he's scared to go out there and maybe embarrass himself or do something that would be you know, obviously detriment to what he wants to do in the sense of a comeback.
Well, Shane, nothing exposes you more than playing championship golf, especially in the world that Tiger lives in, where he's in a fishbowl. And whether he plays great or poorly, every shot is shown on television. But, you know, to his credit, he handled it phenomenally for years. But when it started going south, talk about being exposed. And, you know, he walked off a couple times. He walked off at Torrey Pines there. You know, it's just, you could see it coming. But, I mean, let's face it. Tiger, he was a pretty good driver of the ball early on in his career, you know, early 2000s. But then as his career, you know, progressed, and he went to the graphite shafted driver and started chasing a little bit of distance like everybody else. You know, it was his short game that saved him. You know, I still believe wholeheartedly that Tiger Woods is one of the best putters of all time. I'd say he probably still is in the top half, but his chipping and scrambling skills are what deteriorated over the last 2 years. And if you're afraid out there that, okay, I know I'm going to have to, recovery shots are going to be a big part of my game, as they always have with Tiger. But if you cannot chip the ball or pitch the ball close to the hole, you're exposed. And we saw that at the Hero World Challenge and at TPC Scottsdale. You know, it's like, as you say, not the most demanding golf courses, but he's sculling shots, he's chunking shots around the greens. That stuff just doesn't go away. You can hide behind release patterns or, you know, saying you're kind of changing your method. But when you're one of the best pitchers and chippers and floppers and bunker players of all time, why would you change your release pattern? To me, that never really made sense to me. But obviously we heard a lot of those tag words, reps and all that from Tiger throughout his career, where, you know, it kind of was excused and that was what he gave the media. But to me, that's what's obviously going to trouble Tiger coming back, because that's where, you know, being a little, you know, having a little lack of confidence in your head at the tour level will expose you, because it's tight turf, fast greens, firm greens, and getting the ball up and down is not easy. And if you're deficient in that area, it can prove to be some high scores.
And this is a guy that, I mean, you've played golf with Tiger, you've been around him plenty of times. I mean, this is a guy that I would say, in his prime, probably the most mentally tough guy in the history of golf. I mean, in during the moments when he had to pull off a golf shot or make a putt, I don't know if there was anybody as tough as he was. And you see this, you hear about this, you go through this with him, and you think, is this a guy that almost has the mental yips, that mentally can't pull the trigger? Because we've seen great players go through this. I mean, you know, the first name that comes to mind, in kind of the same era and the same time period, is David Duvall, a guy that was extremely dominant on the PGA Tour and all of a sudden couldn't do it anymore.
Oh, I couldn't agree more, Shane. And you look back at some of the former number one players in the world, you know, arguably none were more popular than Tiger Woods and Jack Nicklaus. Jack Nicklaus's career, you know, he just kind of faded away, quit playing as much, but he never went through the struggles in the public, you know, forum like Tiger has. But, you know, a lot of the former number ones, Nick Faldo, Greg Norman, they just kind of petered off and quit playing. But Tiger's a competitor. He wants to compete, but I have a feeling that right now the battle is between his ears, and I don't think he just wants to go away. I mean, I really hope for everyone's sake, all golfers, kids who've never seen him play golf, that he does come back, because he does have a flair and an essence to the game that nobody else does right now. You know, Rory, Jordan Spieth, you know, Dustin Johnson, they're all fantastic players, but none of them have the charisma and the flair that Tiger does. But, you know, when we were watching the Tour Championship a couple weeks ago, and Rory had that six-footer to win in the playoff, which he eventually did miss, but he went on to win the playoff for the Tour Championship and the FedEx Cup, I thought to myself, you know, there's two people who never would have missed that putt, Jack Nicklaus and definitely not Tiger Woods. They would have made that putt on that final hole to win outright. And that just, to me, is a testament to their mental strength and fortitude. I mean, they would will that ball into the hole somehow, some way. But, you know, right now, I just think it's an upstairs battle with Tiger. I hope he comes back, but I was shocked, as the golf world was, after he committed but then pulled out 2 days later.
And you say you feel like he wants to come back. I mean, do you really believe that? Because I almost get the feeling that maybe he doesn't. I almost am starting to get the feeling that maybe this comeback is, I mean, business-related, or, you know, the feeling that he must do it because this is what he's done his entire life. But, I mean, you and I have had conversations. I remember you and I having a conversation during lunch at Norman's event in Florida, and you were talking about getting a little bit older and, you know, the pressures of playing practice rounds and going to the driving range after a round, and how when you were 25 and 28 and 32, you know, that was just second nature. And as you got into your 40s, it came as a grind. I mean, Tiger's into his 40s now. Do you think that the mental push is still there and the interest is still there?
Maybe it's just me hoping that he still has it, because I think the golf world wants to see him play again. But, you know, that's a great point. Some of the best at their craft, almost it became a burden to them later on in their life, because, you know, some of the best musicians and best at other things almost wish that they, you know, could just do it in the privacy of their home and not have to do it at such a high level in front of, you know, crowds. And maybe Tiger Woods still loves playing golf, but he just doesn't want to have to do it under the microscope of in front of the golf world. So I'd say maybe it's just my hope, along with a lot of other fans of his that, you know, want to see it, because maybe we're yearning for that next dominant guy to play the game of golf.
Well, and it is an interesting, you know, it is interesting. You mentioned the Ryder Cup thing, piggybacking on that for a minute. You know, you mentioned Tiger was a guy that was, you know, he could only hit certain golf shots. I would actually argue that there are a lot of guys now that can hit golf shots that Tiger hit in his prime. It just, there wasn't anybody then that could do it. Now I feel like the Dustins and the Rorys are capable of pulling off those towering five irons from 245 that land soft. You know, maybe they don't have the ability mentally to pull those off at the exact moment they need to, but, you know, it seemed like Tiger almost laid the groundwork for this. And I wonder if Tiger seeing those golf shots over and over again and going, I don't have that in my bag anymore, was one of those things that just continued to eat away at him. Because, you know, if a 40-year-old basketball player that was the best player in the world comes out and watches Anthony Davis play basketball, I mean, he's going to be intimidated, because this is a guy that's doing it, and he's taller and quicker and faster and has handles. You know, it's just almost a different game now. And I wonder if that, you know, eats away at him. Because, you know, you've played with Tiger. This is a guy that he leaned on his distance. He leaned on his ability to overpower players and get into their heads because he was doing this. And now, you know, if he pounds a drive and Dustin pounds a drive, you know, I mean, you can build a target between them.
Well, that's a great point. But, you know, I still think, and I look back at even some of the events I've played in the last couple of years. You know, I haven't played a lot of events, but you know, I've made a few cuts in the ones I have, and I kind of almost take a pride that, yeah, the old dog still has a few tricks in his bag. And I'm sure Tiger, you know, he's a smart guy. He's like, you know, I know I maybe not, can't do it as well as I used to, but I think he takes a lot of pride in the fact that I know he's got an ego to where he can compete, and he wants to show some of these young guys that he hasn't lost it. But at the same time, in order to do it, he's going to have to jump back into the pool. And I just don't know, as to your point, if he's ready to go down that road again. Because I, you know, the embarrassment of failure, man, it's a powerful thing. And he can't hide out there. And I think the last thing he wants to do is what he did there, you know, a year and a half ago, where, you know, he went out and played and then, you know, something went wrong. And he was, you know, I think a couple of times he held behind, you know, he hid behind the physical thing that his glutes weren't activating and, you know, his back was bothering him. But really, I mean, when it came down to the short game exposing him like that, there's nowhere to hide. So I think, you know, that's how he got out of it. But I guess, you know, you could go round and round talking about this, whether you think he's going to come back and what's really to blame. But I have a feeling that Tiger only knows. But I think using that word vulnerable in his last, you know, statement was a big tell on what's really going through Tiger's mind.
Yeah, and you mentioned on Twitter that Tiger said something about getting back to the locker room, and you said, you know, he was only in the locker room at the Memorial. He never really hung out in the locker room. I feel like this is a trend that more young players are doing. You know, they're aside in their own camps. You know, there's not a lot of camaraderie. Do you see that as almost an issue for the PGA Tour, as these young superstars almost, you know, alienate themselves from everybody else on tour?
It's just a generational thing. I mean, it's so different now in the events I played out there. There's not as many guys hanging out having lunch. You know, it's not that our generation where everybody would go to dinner and go have a drink afterward. It wasn't quite like that, like I guess some of the wily veterans said it used to be. But it's certainly more of a selfish type of mentality on the tour. But you know, Tiger, a lot of the reason he didn't go to the locker room too was because he would get hounded in there by, you know, just various people. He'd open up his locker and have stacks and piles of pin flags and autograph requests and whatnot. He was just, you know, he could not get away from it. So oftentimes, I mean, he literally had, you know, Stevie Williams or Joe LaCava, they would drive in, Tiger would leave the hotel with his shoes on.
Right.
And they get in the car, and they get out of the car, and they go right to the range. They play, and after he's practiced or signed a few autographs after his round, he got back in the car, and his locker room was his hotel. You know, so that's mainly why he didn't use the locker room. Occasionally, he'd be in there during a rain delay, but truly, in all the events I played with Tiger, which was hundreds over the years, you never saw him. I mean, Muirfield Village, because of its seclusion and its privacy, and I have a feeling that maybe Mr. Nicklaus said, hey, listen, nobody gets bothered or hounded in here.
Right.
That probably had something to do with it. But, you know, his refuge was his hotel and getting in and out of the car, because at the event, he couldn't hide. You know, that fishbowl he lives in, and nobody could ever claim to know what it's like unless you've lived in it like Tiger has. Man, that's got to wear you out mentally, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely has to age you more than maybe somebody that doesn't get hounded like that at all. When you just
like myself.
I'm just interested in this. When you talk about locker rooms and people putting flags in and maybe other players doing that. When you showed up at an event and you got to your locker, what was in there? I mean, would you have golf ball, shoes, gloves, all that stuff already in the locker for you?
Yeah, they spoiled us pretty well. You know, you're whatever ball and, you know, equipment manufacturers, just stuff you needed for the week. There was usually three or four dozen balls, you know, maybe half a dozen gloves, always three or four new hats. You know, if you ordered any clubs from the manufacturers the previous week, usually those might already be in there on Monday or Tuesday whenever you arrive. I mean, it was pretty much anything. There was, you know, if you had like water supplements, that you put in your, you know, powdered drinks or whatever, stuff like that. But it's pretty much anything you requested was already in there. So when you showed up, you could just go to work. But, you know, you know, I always thought it was kind of weird that even when players would make autograph requests, they would just put it in Tiger's locker. They wouldn't really ask him. And I always was thinking, if you really want to make sure he does it, just ask him sometime, right. Hey, would you mind? Don't just put it in his locker. I remember at Southern Hills in the U.S. Open. I mean, it almost, you know, I guess it was the year Retief Goosen won in the playoff. Somebody, I was walking down the locker room, and somebody said, look at this, and they opened Tiger's locker up. And I'm telling you, it was those old metal lockers that were about 18 inches wide. They were big lockers that week. And the stack of stuff for him to sign in there must have been 5 feet high. And he never went in that locker room. And I'm thinking, does Steiny go in there and get that? Does Stevie Williams go in there? Who is grabbing all this stuff? And you know what? In the end, nobody did. It was right. Sitting there on Sunday night. He just leaves it, you know, because he couldn't get to it. And, I mean, it was his refuge. If he would be there for days signing that. Now, I tend to think maybe Mr. Palmer or Mr. Nicklaus might have handled that a little differently. They met, sat and signed it all. But it was just the world Tiger was living in. So whether it's right or wrong, I just think that, you know, the guy never would get any privacy. And if he wanted to, you know, clear his mind before a tournament, he wouldn't clutter it, you know, by having that going on all week.
Well, and you talked about, you know, getting older and going out on tour and making cuts right now. And the only sport, I mean, you know, golf's Greg Mulligan is the Champions Tour, PGA Tour Champions, whatever you want to call it. And as a 49-year-old that turns 50 early next year, and a guy that, you know, is still hits the ball great. I mean, I've played golf with you. You still hit it great. What is the mentality like as you get to 46, 47, 48, knowing that in a couple of years, you're going to be the rookie again? You're going to be the guy that that guys are looking at going, oh, no, Flesh is out here. He can still beat it. You know, I mean, is it such a strange thing to go through mentally?
You know, I've talked about this a lot just with family and friends, and it is really strange to know that when you turn 50, you have a second career ahead of you. You know, most people are thinking, okay, get me to 60, 62, I can retire and be finished. But, you know, the way the PGA Tour is now, it's hard to stay exempt till you're 35 and 40 years old. So you have this gap. And to me, luckily, I stayed fully exempt until I was 44, 45. I can't remember exact, 44. But the last 3 or 4 years, I've been in this limbo kind of no man's land where, you know, I get in 4 or 5 events a year. You can beg or plead for sponsor exemptions, but those are hard. It's hard to beat out the young, you know, young, sexy college hot rods coming out, you know, I mean, which understandably so. You're going to take the John Rahm, or you're going to take the old broken down horse that's, you know, looking for its last feed out there. So, you know, you have that 4 or 5 year period where you're kind of in no man's land. But when you hit, like when I hit 50 here in May, you have to come out running, because even though you're playing guys your own age and you know, older, man, look at the scores they're shooting. I mean, they are shooting low scores, and they're not playing short courses. I've seen, you know, we do the U.S. Senior Open. We did it at Scioto this year. I mean, that's no cupcake, and those guys are playing great golf. So, you know, I'm trying to stay sharp. I'm playing a lot of golf. I'm not playing a lot of tournament golf, hoping to get into Mississippi here in 2 weeks. The Sanderson Farms, and then playing the Callaway Invitational at the end of the year. Actually, it's sponsored by TaylorMade this year, but it's the Pebble Beach Invitational. So I'm just trying to keep those competitive juices going. So when I turn 50 in May, I got to hit it running out there. In 3 rounds, it's different too. You got to pretty much be on go from the first tee. It's pretty much a shootout. So I'm looking forward to it. I, you know, you never really know how bad you miss something until it's taken away from you. And I've realized that the last 3 or 4 years of not playing a lot of competitive golf.
And, you know, when you do make the transition, I mean, when you do hit 50, I mean, I mentioned earlier, you telling me that, you know, the practice isn't up to what it was at one point, or maybe the practice rounds aren't what they are. I mean, is it almost like a life Red Bull? I mean, do you get fired up? You know, is your energy level higher because you know that, you know, you're not only gonna have a chance to compete and win, but you know, you have a chance to go out there with your game and win 3 or 4 times in a season or win a major championship. I mean, I just feel like mentally you have to just almost be so excited to just get this new life in a sport that you've competed in for 30 years.
You do, and you mentioned, how you the motivation maybe goes away a little bit to practice and put the work in, but believe me, I know that if I'm going to have any success on that PGA Tour Champions, that I have to commit to it like I was playing the PGA Tour when I was 25, 30 years old. You can't go out there and just kind of, half practice and think you're just going to show up and wing it, because believe me, those guys are still working hard. Now, maybe the guys don't work as long on the range or as long on the putting green for, age-related reasons, but maybe I think that's part of the process of getting older, getting wiser, and you've learned how to practice more efficiently. You don't need to necessarily put the amount of time in, but I'm not for one second taking the competition level lightly out on that Champions Tour, because I see the scores. They're shooting 62, 63s, and I don't care if they're playing the local muni that's 6,200 yards. You still got to put the ball in the hole, so maybe I'll have to run out there to Scottsdale and use some of your nice weather this winter to prep.
Hey, guy, I got a guest room. My only request is that you don't yell at me about politics. You do spend a lot of time on Twitter talking politics. I wanted to ask, what's the reaction you get, from golf fans that follow you? I mean, are they telling you to stick to golf, or do you have you fallen into a level you feel comfortable?
Luckily, I don't have too many people hating on me on some of my comments, because if nothing else, I think a lot of what I like to tweet about politics is it's sheer amazement that this goes on in America. Like these two candidates that, no matter what a person's allegiance is, Democrat, Republican, Independent, whatever, I'm just like, this is what we got to choose from. I mean, it's amazing to me how it's played out in the media. And I think a lot of what I tweet is actually, it's just frustration. I'm just like, people are like, man, you're so mad. Why, I'm like, I am, because the country deserves better than this. And believe me, I am no political activist.
Right.
I'm really not. I just watch TV and I see what's going on with Trump and Hillary. And I'm just like, seriously, I mean, how can these people, with all that they have allegedly done, be who we have to pick to run the greatest country in the world?
Right. It's like those PGA.
To me, it's frustration.
Yeah, it's like those PGA Tour seasons when we don't have like a real legitimate PGA Tour Player of the Year, and you have to just kind of like lean on somebody because you've got to give the award out, and you go, yeah, that guy won a couple times. That's fine. I wanted to finally ask you, how much of the Ryder Cup were you able to watch?
I watched practically all of the last 2 days. I watched the morning matches, and then I would go practice the first 2 days. And then I watched, I would say most of Sunday.
What'd you think about Rory versus Reed, and Rory and Reed throughout the week? Did you like it? Did you like the antics and the fired up, those guys going crazy, as a past, PGA Tour player and soon to be PGA Tour champions? Or did you think it was a little too much, or did you like the passion?
I liked the passion. I thought sometimes it was a little too overly dramatic. Like, it was so put on, but at the same time, I could not begin to claim that I know anything about playing it under that kind of pressure, where I'm sure your emotions are just running super high. Having said that, some of the golf that was played that week, and especially Sunday, it's the best golf I think I've ever seen by a collection of 24 people. We didn't see much of the final matches on Sunday, but they're dropping 15, 20 foot, 50 foot putts like it's nothing, and I'm like, nobody can understand the amount of pressure and how difficult it is to make putts, period. But these guys are doing it in one-on-one matches, which I actually think you and I might have texted each other. Like, this was the best golf, I think, collectively, that I've seen in years.
Right.
But what Phil and Sergio did was phenomenal. I mean, I think 10 birdies to 9 birdies, something like that. But Hazeltine's not an easy course, and whether – Justin Rose thinks it was set up a little too easy or not, I don't care if the pins are in the center, you still have to make birdies. So Man, it was great to watch. Fun stuff. Patrick Reed and Rory McIlroy. I mean, the first eight holes of their match, you couldn't have drawn it up to, with more excitement.
Well, it was fun, I think, too, because it capped off a rather strange PGA Tour season, at least in my opinion. You know, you come off a year where Jordan Spieth wins two majors, and Jason Day wins his first major, and you know Rory won the last two in 2014, and you really do have this conversation about, you know, three players kind of emerging as the best out there in a new big three. That was the big story early in January. And then all of the major winners are first-time winners. You know, Dustin Johnson, of course, a type of player, now PGA Tour Player of the Year, that I think, you know, has the game that obviously can compete with those guys and win, you know, four, five, six majors if he kind of puts his mind to it. But, you know, it was a strange season in that regard. And you get this final cap of this amazing, amazing event that everybody was watching. You know, I mean, the sports world really paid attention to it. I just thought it really capped off a season that kind of needed that little bit of a boost towards the end. And I think that's why the Tiger news, the Tiger WD news, was a bit of a bummer, because, you know, that was 2 weeks after. I mean, you're getting a great Ryder Cup, and then you get Tiger Woods returning. I mean, golf was on a very, very big high, and now you get the Safeway that has, you know, Phil Mickelson's there, you know, which is good, but it's just not, you know, Tiger and Phil in the same pairing for 2 days.
I think that is a product of, like, speaking of the season, how it went this year, everybody kind of played in spurts, with Jordan playing well early, Dustin playing well late, you know, Stenson just dominating at the Open Championship. I think this is might kind of be the new norm with how the PGA Tour seasons go, because there's no clear and dominant number one. Like when Tiger was, you know, all the focus every week was on Tiger Woods when he was coming in. I know I'm circling back to Tiger again, but, you know, or when Greg Norman was, you know, world number one, excuse me, world number one for hundreds of weeks, Nick Faldo was the top. There was always a clear and dominant number one, and albeit there was a little bit of a villain. They didn't let you in. They were kind of, you know, very selfish in their comments. It played everything close to the vest. And now I think we have, you know, obviously Jason Day is number one, but there are two or three that are pushing right or scratching right on his heels. And I think it's just the new nature of the PGA Tour. There are so many good players, but there's not a clear number one. And I think it just might be what we have to get used to. You know, it's, if Jason Day doesn't play now, he's not playing probably the rest of this year because of his back. The topic and the attention will shift onto, you know, the whoever is right behind him but playing well.
Right.
I just think it's a different environment now on the tour. You know, the top 125 now is way deeper and way better than it was 10 years ago. I argue the fact that it's going to be hard for a guy to have a 10-year career on tour anymore. You know, when I played. You know, my first 10 years, I played okay. I didn't, you know, I was very consistent, but I was definitely no world beater. It took me 5 years on the tour before I even won. But anymore, you got those 25 guys coming off the web.com tour, another 25 coming out of the, you know, web.com final. So you have 50 new guys. And I would say that those 50 guys are far better than the, I guess it was 35 that got their cards through the Q school. They're just better. I see high school kids now, and I see a lot of the scores that these guys are shooting in collegiate events. There's just way more good players. So I think to have a 10-year career on tour now, you're going to have to play some serious golf. And I think the turnover is going to be a lot, you know, a lot bigger each year. And having a, you know, a guy play till he's 35, 40 years old on tour now, it's going to be tough. That Champions Tour, I'm looking forward to see, you know, I would say that in the next five to eight years, I would guess that the Champions Tour is going to have to look at moving the age downward to, you know, maybe 45. Because as guys on their tour now are getting older, there's not going to be as many guys turning 50. There just aren't going to be that many guys who've been on tour that long. So
if they, you're hoping they wait 4 or 5 years before they do that, though, I'm assuming.
Absolutely. I mean,
let you dominate for a few. All right, I got a few rapid fire questions that I'm going to let you go. First things first, favorite golf course on the PGA Tour?
On the PGA Tour, Riviera.
Best guy not named Tiger Woods that you played with in your time on tour?
Well, that's a good question. Best player?
Yep.
Wow. Probably Tom Watson.
Still, I mean, he was, you know, he was later in his career when you played with him, but still when you saw him play, you just went, oh, this guy's got something different.
You could see why he's been great so long. His shots still sounded like they were coming out of the dead center of the club face all the time. And believe me, there's a different sound when you hear Tiger Woods or Jack Nicklaus or Greg Norman hit the ball. And I know I'm dating myself a little bit here, but very few guys would play it right out of the center of the club every time. But Tom Watson, man, I'll tell you what, his shots still sounded like that when I played with him. I'm granted this was 12 years ago, but, you know, and that's not discounting any of the new guys coming out.
Right.
But I don't know. That one just impressed me quite a bit.
Most underrated player during your time on tour?
Good. If there's a time constraint on these questions, I'm going to be in trouble.
It's not like the long drive competition. You don't have to do it in 2 minutes.
Yeah. But most underrated. Now, at my time, it was Adam Scott. But now it was 5 years ago when I was playing full time.
Right.
So to me, it was Adam Scott. He hadn't won a major yet. Fantastic ball striker, but his putting was holding him back. So I'm just going to say Adam Scott. I still think he's a little underrated.
Funniest PGA Tour player that nobody talks about?
Well, that's an easy one, but with the advent of social media, he's come to light a little bit, but Tom Gillis.
Okay.
That guy, let me just put it this way. If you're in a rain delay, everybody is around his table. along with Carl Peterson, those two together, you know, and they usually drag Lumpy in there with them. Those three together could entertain a clubhouse full of people easily, and they're not talking about anything. It's just funny.
Right. What's the funniest thing a fan has ever yelled out at you or said to you or done to you while you've been playing?
Go ahead and break it, meaning I kind of had a little fire in my belly when I played out there on tour.
you did? I never knew.
Yeah. And I later on in my career, I usually just started giving away the drivers or putters just so it, you know, I knew if it wasn't going to work for me, I gave it to somebody, you know, on the 18th hole or whatever. But,
okay.
You know, if I was banging it or, you know, getting a little testy out there on the course and showing my rear end a little bit. Somebody I just remember yelled out, go ahead and break it. You know, like put me out of my misery and put the club out of its misery too.
You played in 462 PGA Tour events and counting. How many golf clubs do you think you broke? In play. I'm saying during play, because I mean, you know, practice sessions and stuff don't count.
Well, let me say this. I was very discreet if I knew that one of the clubs wasn't going to make it to the next shot. I was very discreet usually in how it would meet its demise. But I would probably say, oh, it'd have to be a couple dozen.
So discreet is in what? Like would you like break it like over by the gallery, or would you just set it in the water? I mean, you wouldn't do full Rory throw?
If you're going to be discreet, you certainly wouldn't break it by the gallery. No, I would kind of lean it on the bag and just step on it, or I'd put it in the bag and just push on the head of it until it just broke in the bag. No, I would never just break it over my knee. You want to know the most surprising fact about Steve Flesh and his PGA Tour career?
Yes.
I was never fined for my behavior one time.
Should you have been?
I'm telling you. Oh my God! Should I have been? I mean, you don't know how many weeks I would come home on Sunday after the event, and I would be fully expect that FedEx envelope to come with the note from Andy Pazder or Henry Hughes, who was, you know, with the tour for years. I would fully expect that FedEx envelope to show up on Tuesday or Wednesday with a letter saying, hey, listen, you know, we had a complaint, or that we caught you on TV, you know, dropping a, you know, a bad word, or never did. I mean, people, I tell people that today, I mean, tour players, they're like, there is no way. But well, I guess I was on the right side of a few people with the tour. That, or they just said, no, this guy can't afford it. I don't know.
Well, it's so funny that you had such a temper too, because if, you know, if people meet you, and I've got to hang out with you and have dinner with you, and it's, you know, you have this like amazing disposition about life, and it's just crazy to think that you had this mini psycho side of yourself on the golf course. You'd get a little fired up, and I just love that. I love that. There was fire there. There was fire in the belly. I'd hate to see you watch the Kentucky Wildcats in a national championship game.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, it's, well, first of all, there was nothing mini about my temper. I mean, it was full on. I was just discreet about it. But, you know, sometimes even with, like you say, with Kentucky games, I'm, you know, they're like, hey, come over and watch the game. I'm like a friend. I'm like, nah, I'm just, you know, I'm like, I always say I got something to do, because I have to be able to watch it on my own in the house. I mean, I can watch it with my family, but sometimes I have to walk out of the room, or if I utter something, I don't want it to embarrass somebody, not my family, you know, but it's in there. I get it from my mom. We're competitive, but, you know, unfortunately now I've passed it on to my son, and he gets a little, you know, hot under the collar too with his golf. But the fire is good in golf, but the main thing is how you channel it
right before
your next shot. Do you use it to, you know, as determination, or do you let it distract you and interfere with the rest of your round? Or, you know, that's the worst scenario, but you have to collect yourself. And I really wasn't 35, 40 years old until I figured out kind of how to channel it correctly. Sometimes I still don't, but now I'm just tired of getting mad. So
now there's no energy to get fired up. You don't even lean on that club. You lean on the club to break it. It doesn't break, and you go, "It's all right."
It didn't worth it, because now I'm gonna have to fix it. And you know,
it's just not worth it. Well, Steve, I appreciate you joining me. Appreciate you talking some Tiger and your future. I know next year is a big year, so it'll be exciting. I mean, not only do you get to do some broadcasting, but you get to do a lot of playing. And I know Champions Tour is something you've really been looking forward to. You can follow Steve at Steve_Flesh. Be prepared. The golf commentary also mixed with a little political commentary, but thank goodness this thing is over in about 4 weeks, and we won't have to talk about it for a long, long time. Steve, I appreciate it.
Absolutely, Shane. My pleasure. Glad I finally got on with you.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole! It's in the hole!
Just a reminder, everybody, if you're going to get a golf t-shirt for anyone, you've got to go to swingjuice.com. Swingjuice.com offers the best t-shirts in the business, great for post and pre-round fun and activities, great to wear to the bar, really great to wear anywhere. They are comfortable, they are savvy, they are funny, they are topical, and they're always coming out with new styles. If you use the offer code BACON, you will save 20% at checkout. Swingjuice.com, check it out right now. Well, that'll do it for this week's Clubhouse Podcast. Thanks so much for listening, subscribing. If you do, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Shane Bacon, at the Clubhouse Pod. I will be in South Korea over the next few days. I'm going out there to check out a golf course called Whistling Rock. I'm excited to do it. Never been to South Korea. Never played golf in Asia. Sands around in Japan with some rental clubs back when my sister lived over in Okinawa. So I'm really excited to get out there and play some golf and check it out and see what that kind of golf community looks like. But I will have a podcast next week. We're going to have a season wrap-up and a season preview, as the wraparound season has already begun. I know it's crazy to think, but still time to look back on a season that was. I mean, you know, we're only in October. The season really did just wrap a couple of weeks ago. So we will have a podcast next week, and then I'll have a full report of the South Korea trip the following week. As I mentioned, make sure you subscribe. I'm going to be giving away some stuff from the Clubhouse Podcast Twitter account. So make sure you follow that, at the Clubhouse Pod. We'll be giving some stuff away over the next few weeks and few months as golf happens less and less. And we're also going to have interviews. We're going to have players and some people outside of golf join us. So the podcast will continue week after week. I appreciate everybody listening and subscribing. If you've never written a review on iTunes, do that for us right now. I will send you $5 Twitter dollars if you do that. Have a great weekend. Play some golf. Make some birdies.